quite a while since we've opened up the program with Artie Shaw. Good evening. Jeff Bennett here on this 20th day of April. Good to be back. When we open with this music, we typically are dealing with health-related programs on Wednesday. It's been some time since I've done it. For those of you who pay any attention to our websites, you'll notice that there's been very little activity for probably well over a week. And so we're going to talk a bit about health tonight. I guess much of it leads to mental health. And I don't particularly care to spend a lot of time discussing what we're going to open with, but it kind of explains to you why I've not been around. But more importantly, I think in so many respects, it tends to talk about mental and physical health, specifically when you're dealing with hospitals. And we've got two different stories to share with you tonight. One of them written by my friend Charles Dickens, who a little later in the program will share with you what he and his wife have gone through with a hospital visit here in the Valley lately. Last Tuesday morning, I had an appointment with my urologist to change out my catheter, which has been too much discussion over these past nearly 7+ months. When my catheter was installed on September the 2nd, it was due to, theoretically, due to this minor heart attack that I had. I remember being loaded up into the ambulance, being taken to the hospital. I don't think I was awake when I got there. And a determination was made that I needed some heart surgery. And it was reasonably minor, a couple of stents. But they decided to install a catheter in me. I'm sure so the doctor didn't get peed on when he was doing surgery on me. And a catheter was not removed when I was let out of the hospital 3 days later, and it should have been. And as time went by, I began to read the hospital report that claimed that I had urinary issues, which was interesting. I mean, as you get older, things slow up a bit. No two ways about it, but I don't pee in my pants. Some nights I get up, some nights I don't. And now I've suffered this catheter for many, many months, been through two different urologists. Neither one of them is worth a damn. Because they don't care, they talk to you, not with you. They don't attempt to educate you, they just try to scare you into surgery. And so I've had them in, I've had them out, we've tried tests, etc., and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, for a very long period of time. Well, last Tuesday morning, I had an appointment with my current urologist, idiot, for the purpose of changing out and putting a new catheter in. But I've experienced some interesting things going on over the last several weeks that indicate to me that I may have the ability to urinate, even though it's going to take some time. Because the longer things like this are left in your body, the more destructive they're going to be to your body and its functions, and may take a long, long time to ever recover back to its natural state, or may never recover without further work from the doctors. So we had this discussion. Before the gal changed it out, I said, I need to talk to your PA. And she was in. She was the smart one. And, or was she? Yeah, she was. And we discussed what I was going through and the experiences I was having. And she said, okay, if you want to, let's give it a try, but let's do a test first. So they had their guy come in and run a couple of scans on me. And they decided to remove the catheter. and I had no ability urinating. And I left. Now, they inform me, we close at 4 in the afternoon, so if there's a problem, come back. I had no problem until 11 o'clock Tuesday night. And I found that I was no longer urinating, I was dribbling. And it was burning and it was hurting a little bit. So I knew I was going to have to go back into the doctor's office on Tuesday to get this dam rectified and get reinstalled. Well, I had to go through hell to get in there because you can't call direct. You get an answering service. And I said, don't give me your crap. Here's my name. Here's my birth number. You need to get a hold of the Goodyear, Arizona office right now and tell them I need to come over this morning for a replacement. And they made the call and got it arranged. I went at 11:15. So the nurse installs the new catheter. Now keep in mind, this is all last Tuesday and then Wednesday morning. But just to make sure that this nurse had done it properly, the physician's assistant, not my normal one, came in, ran another little scan up on my bladder area, and determined that, okay, we're going to do this, but we're going to let me double check to make sure she's installed it correctly. Well, that should have been my first scare, because what this gal had done was fine. I've been through this enough that I know what's right and what's wrong. And this gal put an extra bit of a twinge on this catheter, which unfortunately I think caused a little bit of damage, possibly with bladder or some other part of the body back there. And it didn't hurt a lot, but it was uncomfortable. And you go through this nonsense. And of course, to test it out, they want to make sure I'm filling the bag, and the bag fills up very quickly. And I go to drain it in the bathroom. I go to check out. Noticed a couple little spots of blood, but that's not surprising. That can happen when you get a new catheter first put in. And by the time I got out to the car, it was running quite a bit more blood. And I continued to empty that thing all day long, and it still kept running blood color. Now, there was urine in there as well, but it was still colors that shouldn't have been there, not for that length of time. So I knew something had happened. There was some damage had been caused. And at some point in time, and I don't recall when, I made a decision I had to go back to the damn hospital. Oh, I know what it was. At 3:10 Wednesday afternoon, this is a week ago today, I called the answering service again and said, this is Jeff Bennett. I was in there this morning and had some minor surgery with a catheter. I need to talk to the physician's assistant right now and explain to her why. I will call and get a hold of them and have them call you. You can't call this doctor's office direct. It's a game. And the woman never called. Oh, the gal at the answering service called me back and said, I left a message. Left a message? With who? On an answering service? On a recording, because the PA never called me back. At 4:30 last Wednesday afternoon, which would be 1 week and 40 minutes ago, I had my wife drive me back to the ER, emergency room at the hospital. And of course, you go through the normal, you got to sign in, set up, get ready, they go run a quick test on you, make sure you don't have COVID and all this crap. And they finally moved me into the back room. Now, while I lay there waiting for these people to come in and do this test, that test, scans, all this business, little by little, before they actually took me in there, because I had a lot of blood in the catheter, and I was waiting and waiting, and I finally walked up to the gal at the entry and said, look, lady, I know there's a lot of people here. There's a lot of things going on, but how long do I need to keep bleeding before I kick the bucket here, right here in your waiting room floor? She went back and got a hold of one of the doctors. The doctor came out and got me, along with a student of his, a student doctor. They kind of cheated. They kind of made some other people wait. They took me into a room, ran a couple scans. I said, I want you to go back out for a few minutes. We're going to have a room for you very quickly. Well, they got me in that room. And amongst the phenomenal crew that came out to work with me was a nurse named Lauren, Dr. Kirk, his student, and another gentleman's name who I can't recall right now. They were an amazing team of people who, first and foremost, realized that they had to replace the catheter that had been installed. I was being clogged. Whatever this PA had done that morning had me clogged. My catheter continued to get clogged. I couldn't urinate. I couldn't function. And I couldn't poop. Oh, it's just, I know this is not exciting, but there's a reason I share all this with you. And then we'll eventually get to Charlie's story. Because there's too many similarities. And that's scary. So, the decision has now been made by this phenomenal team of four people. Practitioners back in the emergency room. But they're going to have to change the catheter. But they did not install a standard catheter, which typically has two tubes on it. One is used for flushing, and the other one is used for attaching to a catheter, a tube that goes into the bag that allows your urine to drain into that bag. I could understand why the triplicate, but they began to talk with me. Not to me, with me. There's a big difference, people. And that's the problem I've had with two urologists. They don't talk with you. They don't talk with you as you have any intelligence whatsoever. Well, I had my cell phone with me, and just, you know, before they began the work, and turned on some music. Some mellow Wes Montgomery. Mellow stuff, real stuff. Not the stuff he did in the late 70s with Verve Records when they played a lot of string music attached to the jazz. And they mellowed out. They were getting into the music. And the nurse started talking to me about the music. So they get the new catheter installed. And they install a flushing bag into one of the tubes. It's designed to help flush you out, get the crud out, this stuff that's been building up, that's being blocked, and winds up blocking the drain going into the, whatever they call a bag. And then they sat there and did some things with the hoses. By this time, I've got two or three hoses coming out of this catheter. And or going into it due to the flushing devices. And they laid the drainage lines out in a very specific manner. And that struck me. Because in most cases, what they'll do is just hang the... most nurses and people in the ER will just take those lines and they'll just kind of drag them. They'll be under your leg, over your leg, whatever the case may be. They taught me the proper way that those things had to be hung to do their job properly. And that struck me because no one's done this before. And I can see the difference in the way that we're flowing. It's quite interesting. They had to continue to drain the bag because I was flushing out quite a bit. But my bladder was completely full, so what else was I going to do? And then they had a bag, which they had to replace several times, which was flushing me out. Eventually, they admitted me to the hospital. Now, this was all last Wednesday night. They've got a new section of this hospital that has been renovated. It used to be something else. And it now acts like little individual rooms up and down the hallways. interesting staff. The head nurse that was on that night didn't have a lot of great personality, but she was decent at what she did. And they get me up in the bed, and they do this, and they do that, get me some warm blankets. Hopefully I can sleep, but no guarantee to that. So I go through several different groups of nurses, etc. My doctor, my heart doctor, was notified that I was in there. Interesting enough, last Wednesday afternoon, I was supposed to get a CT scan, which had been ordered by my heart doctor, but my heart's not really giving me issues, not that I'm aware of. Well, I'd reschedule that appointment to happen at the hospital. Well, I discussed that at the hospital. They had it rescheduled to be done at the hospital instead of the other place that does it. And then my doctor came in, and we talked a bit about it. And I was kind of in and out of things, and so certain things didn't register properly with my head. And he decided we're going to hold off on the CAT scan. And let's deal with the problems I'm having problems now, which was the drainage, the ability to urinate, et cetera, et cetera. Well, as the day went by, I began to realize what he had talked about, but I was noticing some strange things that I'd never felt before with this heart valve thing they put in. So I called the doctor's office and left a note that I had the nurse get a hold of them because they'll respond to the nurses faster. They went ahead and rescheduled a CAT scan, a CT scan for that night. And they did that at 4 o'clock in the morning. Now, this is 4 o'clock in the morning on Friday. Time goes on. Everything checks out. Bingo, boingo. Time to let me out. Friday afternoon, 4:30. Interesting. I've been in the hospital exactly 48 hours. And at 4:30, I'm released. My wife comes and picks me up. That in itself is enough to give me a heart attack. I began to realize my wife's driving scares the living daylights out of me. Scares the living daylights out of me. She's all over the place. She can't focus. She's moving from side of the lane to side of the lane. And she's, oh my God, I ain't doing this anymore. So we got home. And things are all right for a while. And then it started again, and the blockage began again. Now keep in mind, I've still got the triple tube in me. Now I've learned some things about a degree of activating certain portions of that tube, the portion that is supposed to be the main drainage that will drain your stuff into the bag. That wasn't running. It wasn't opening. It wasn't draining. It wasn't allowing liquid to leave my bladder, et cetera, et cetera. But I learned about some better use of the third tube. And I could take the cap off of that, and I could urinate, not full strength, but I could urinate to a certain degree out of that tube directly into the toilet. But I still wound up going back to ER Friday night. And we had to deal with the flush out again. No exchange of the catheter, just a flush out. Interestingly enough, my nurse, Lauren, was not on nurse duty beginning Friday night. She was part of the check-in crew, one of the nurses that would check you in and take your temperature and your blood pressure and stuff like that. And so I got to see Lauren again. And then I got home. Oh, by the way, on Friday night, I drove back on my own, not with the wife. And subsequently, I wound up having to drive back in again Saturday night. Same problems. Blockage. Pain. What is going on? There's no resolve to this. Continues to worsen. And they did some more work. And it worked like a champion. And I'm home all day Sunday. And Sunday night, everything's great. And then at some point in time, and I don't remember when, this is Wednesday, sometime on Monday, I was forced to go back in to ER. Continued problems, continued difficulty, no passing of urination. I drove over there again. And I wound up with another nurse who came in there and understood the problem instantly. And within 20 minutes, had me flushed out. And bag was draining perfectly. And I went on my way, came home. Slept in a degree of comfort, peace, solace. And then Tuesday came along, and it happened again. And who knows, I may be confusing days at this point in time. Oh, no, I'm not. No, Monday came along. And what happened on Monday is my regular nurse, of course, was still working the secondary duty, not her regular duty, and was shocked to see me back in there again. She's getting upset now. And so I get these other two nurses that come in to flush me out. Now, what they do is they've got a device that they insert into it. They insert a certain amount of liquid, and they start sucking it out. And when they did it, the cap of the thing broke off and splattered all over the room we were in. The two of them just sat there in shock. They didn't know what to do. Now, first and foremost, there was no urine in it. It was a specialized water they use, which does no damage to anybody. These two nurses decided to go take a shower. Yeah. They were dragging butt. They didn't know what the hell they were doing. The decision was made to replace the catheter again, but with a larger tubed catheter, fatter, which would allow better drainage of these little things that kept showing up in there, blocking it off. My nurse, Lauren, was not even dressed for nursing duty that night. A pair of pants on, a t-shirt. That's what how she's checking, helping to check people in. But she's so ticked off, she has to come back there and counsel these women. One of the bimbos didn't even come back. But the other one, who I don't really like, Lauren had to teach her what to do. Well, it ultimately got done. I assisted her because she still wasn't too smart. Oh, don't touch this because it's subject to disease. I said, lady, I've suffered enough in this place. Okay, they brought actually an older nurse in to help with this function this time. But I got it done. Thus far, I'm still in good shape. I'm beat out. I'm worn out. I'm tired out. I know what these people are going through. Absolute unbelievable hell. There was a Hispanic woman sitting next to me that obviously was having tremendous difficulty. And her problems are far more in depth than mine. At one time she had cancer. She's got things stuck in her and tubes in and out of her that's unbelievable. To the point that one of the tubes sticks out of her side and she'll start peeing on her clothes. And the back of her outfits gets wet. I felt so bad for her that I was prepared to say, I'll wait. Get this lady in. She needs help now. My problem is I become too well known about that hospital. People are starting to ask me if I want a job over there. That's terrible. So these are amongst the prime reasons that I've not been around as much as I like to be. And I sit there working on getting programs put together, and then something else happens. Well, I went through enough nonsense yesterday that I got home. I couldn't, and I actually went back to the hospital a little after six last night, not because I needed it, but because Lauren, who has become my champion in so many respects, she's so damn good. And she's a young kid. To me, she's a young gal, probably maybe late 20s, maybe she's 30, I don't think so. And I came home and written a note to her, a fairly interesting one-page lengthy note. And I inserted something else in the envelope. And she did not get in as early as she normally does yesterday, and I went back at 10 o'clock last night. And she was back in her nurse's outfit doing what she does best. And she knew I was waiting to see her, and as soon as she got a break, she came out for a minute. And I handed her the envelope, and she said, well, I hope there's nothing in it, because we're not allowed to accept gifts. I said, Lauren, you have been my gift. It's that simple. Just some things for you to read. I didn't bother to tell her. I'd enclosed a check for $500 in there for her. She deserves it. She's something else. Now, that's kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly of some of the... You can believe that these are the kind of things that are going on in the health syndicate today. No, let's not do it. I'm not going to have time. Look at the experience I went through with the other hospital banner. Times they sent me home with infections that they never even dealt with. They just ignored them. And I was back and back and back forever and ever and ever. And some of the things that I've had to deal with here more recently, Banner could have easily done. They could have gone in with a triplicate catheter quite some time ago. And so my friend Charles Dickens winds up having to get his wife into the hospital recently. And his story became interesting. In fact, it's the first piece that he's written that I've actually published on drkelly.net. It's an article entitled Primum Non Nescere. First, do no harm. That's from the oath written about 2,400 years ago, my friends, by Hippocrates, the pioneer of modern medicine. Hippocrates was the author of over 70 books on medicine, most notably the patient's treatment, not just the disorder, but in tandem with the patient, because they were inextricably linked in his mind. Charles chose to write about this because of a couple of encounters with factory healthcare. Factory healthcare. I think of all the years that I've discussed health care, I don't think I've ever seen it written in that terms, Charles, and it fits. The most neglected part of factory medicine, or the business of healthcare, my friends, is not the patient, but the family. It's not intentional, but like everything else in life, we can only attend to a couple of things at a time. It's also expensive to be nice non-participants. I mean, people who do not enable the business financially, of course. But you see, we're all easily distracted, sidetracked, especially when greed enters the equation. I think most of us know that. Avarice seems to subordinate all other considerations in every business. Treating people well always loses to financial expediency. The factory concept, my friends, entered the treatment of infirmities when physicians and other medical practitioners realized that there's gold in them thar ills. All right, so it's lousy paranomasia. You know, probably some time ago dawned on some NBA that streamlining healthcare practices would significantly increase profits. So wellness fell victim to greed and medicine became a business. Well, Henry Ford, an American industrialist, he pioneered the assembly line, revolutionizing the factory production environment. It's the process by which nearly everything is manufactured worldwide today. I mean, I say almost, since a few bespoke craftspeople insist on a personal touch. Then, of course, there's the assembly line process, or system builds everything as it moves through a succession of workers. Each adds something or performs a limited number of tasks as the item moves efficiently from station to station. In Henry Ford's early business, it took a crew half a day to build a single automobile, but his innovation of the assembly line decreased that time to 93 minutes, increasing output and subsequent profits, massive profits. My God, think about that. Think about that. In the old days, it took a half a day to build an automobile. Henry Ford comes along with something that takes 93 minutes, 93 minutes to build a car. I know, those were Model Ts. Everything we do, everything we have, my friends, is a result of this industrial advancement. Everything from breakfast in a restaurant to the computer that we use to do these programs that Charlie uses to write his articles. Including the topic of this article, factory healthcare. All of this owes its profits to the advent of Ford's assembly line and industrialization processes. Oh, yeah, I know. There's efficiencies in the process. That's the idea. But every efficiency has a corresponding cost. Costs which may lower the manufacturing cost and increase output, but the pride in individual contribution and personalization is lost. Something Lauren has not done. As in the healthcare's case, the loss in so many cases has been the personal touch, especially with the family, the loved ones are concerned. A short bit of time ago, Charles's wife, Patty, was required minor surgery to repair a torn rotator cuff. The process is now outpatient surgery. No hospital stay. Here's how it works. Pre-check-in. How will you pay? Patient check-in. The patient prep, the anesthesia, the surgery, the recovery, the post-op instructions, and the release, and they send you home after 5 hours to the tune of $96,000. $19,200 an hour billed to an insurance company, and less than 90 minutes of that was actual surgery. So then Charlie receives 5 generic and very impersonal text messages throughout this entire 5-hour process. No personal contact, of course. Just text messages. Oh, and let's not forget about that lady. $6,000 that was billed to the insurance company. Well, this is kind of interesting because I've seen and experienced this as well. You see, insurance companies pay a negotiated or allowed amount, not the billed amount sent to the patient. Oh, no, my friends. Only unlucky customers pay the total cost. Ho, 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 ho. I saw that as I began to study over my hospital stays. At $300,000 for 3 days. And, of course, the amount of money the insurance company Resolve was considerably less. I remember being in, having to go to ER back in 2020 in the early days of COVID. I thought I had a mini stroke. They decided to keep me, even though I had diagnosed what I was positive had actually brought me there. It wasn't a mini stroke. Well, these guys kept me for 21 hours. Billed the hospital $96,000. Or billed the insurance company. Insurance company said 30-some thousand. Here's the worst part of it all. My diagnosis was correct. Theirs was all over the place. They were just trying to find a way to build their income. Can you believe this? So the medical facility, the practice, or doctor, negotiates an allowed amount with the insurance company. So the bill you see for $96,000, the bill that Charlie got for $96,000 was not what the insurance company paid the facility. The payment depends on the physician's status as an in-network, that's a member of the insurance carrier's program, or maybe an out-of-network, which means the physician does not accept that negotiated settlement. If the physician is out of the network, the insured, the patient, is responsible for the difference between the negotiated and billed amounts. When's the last time you took your car to a mechanic? I mean, isn't this the exact, precise process that you go through? There's no anesthesia, of course, when you take your car in, although you may need it once you get the final bill. Here's the process you go through before receiving the bill. Pre-check. How will you pay? Patient check-in. Patient prep. Surgery. Recovery. Post-operative instructions. Anesthesia to lessen the pain of the payment. And the final release. Now, You hear a lot of comparatives in here, don't you? The comparisons are on the money, honey. Getting your car repaired is the same assembly line mentality with personal care and attention. You're like your car. A defective unit needing repair or adjustment. The process is the same. Yeah, the clothes they wear are a little bit different. One group of operatives, a little greasier hands than the other, but they're still scamming a lot of bucks out of us. So these outpatient clinics or surgery centers, my friends, are nothing more than a shop to process defective people. You're plopped in a chair or on a gurney, wheeled through the process from admitting through release. And you're afforded the same care as a defective automobile in the repair shop. It's competent and often expert, but not at all personal. Welcome to Factory Healthcare. My God, at her young age, Lauren's outmoded because she does care. A lot. How much time did you spend with your family physician during your last visit? Time for the average doctor visit is between 13 and 24 minutes. Most are less than 15 minutes. And the number of patients per day averages 20. And the panel size of the number of patients a doctor's practice can manage effectively is 2,000 annually. Is there any wonder that scheduling an appointment is difficult? and the personal time with your caregiver and technician is limited to a brief encounter? Come on, look what I've gone through with Dr. Pissant, Dr. Kaplan. I've been going to this guy for what, 4 months now? I've actually sat in an exam office with him one time because his nurses and his practitioners, associates is what they're called, PAs. They're the ones that are dealing with me. Interesting enough, I've had instances where some of them were far more willing to talk with me. The doctor can't even bother. This is unbelievable. I mean, come on. But we go, we expect a call back with results to those meetings. We never get them. Because the staff necessary to perform that unprofitable activity is not cost effective. You need to call, leave a message if you want to know. Oh, not anymore. Oh, no. No, I'll send a notification telling me that I can get on my profile and all the answers are online. Well, how many different doctors? I've got the heart surgeries. I got the urinary guy. I got my regular doctor. I got this. I got that. Hey. But you can't just have it all go to one place. No, you got to go to a separate profile for every one of them. So I basically told them all to kiss my assets. They can't call to leave us a message. You know, in the factory setting, it's called throughput. Lowering the time with each patient increases the throughput and therefore the profit. My friends, the modern medical practice is a business, just like everything else in America. They exist to make money, and if in the process they can mend a few defective units, all the better. I know that statement sounds quite cynical, but considering most practitioners' quality and level of care, it seems perfectly reasonable to me. Hippocrates? Who is he? There's more analogies in the business of healthcare's factory environment. There's medical codes. Those are numbers used by the insurance companies and the service providers, you know, the doctors themselves, that prescribe the procedure. Nothing more than an excellent simile. Everything from an exam to brain surgery has a corresponding number, an associated authorized parts kit, just like your automobile mechanic. Next time you visit your auto tech, ask to see the flat rate manual. Oh, it lists codes and payments for automobile repairs and the associated parts kit. It tells the tech how much time is allowed for the repair and the related cost. Their incentive, of course, is to beat the flat rate or work as quickly and efficiently as possible. Use the appropriate professional shortcuts. But the billing process, that's computerized. No big deal. Technician enters the code, your system calculates your bill, just like the medical business. And you pay the flat rate or acceptable amount for the work. And if the mechanic beats the flat rate, they keep the surplus. The part of the business is behind the curtain, so you don't see it. You see, the flat rate manual was the concept behind the CMS. That's the Center for Medical Studies, their medical coding system. When a doctor performs the service, their staff codes your visit and sends it to the insurance company's claims department, who then decides if the service is performed or necessary, authorized, correctly codified, justified, and payable to the practice. And if denied, you, the insured, are responsible for the claim and the difference between the allowed and the billed amount. And any discrepancy or adjudication or justification is the patient's problem. And you're allowed 2, maybe 3 appeals to the insurance provider should you disagree. You know, about 15 years ago, Charlie enjoyed a quadruple bypass. That bill exceeded 550,000 big ones. But he made the mistake of driving to the hospital emergency room rather than using an ambulance service. It was obviously not an emergency in the insurance company's eyes, since he could still drive. The insurance company maintained that Charlie had called and requested an in-network facility, and if this had been a valid emergency, they would have paid up to the billed amount. But since Charlie had circumvented their process, he was responsible for the difference. It was not an emergency, because he made his own way to the out-of-network facility. And it took 2 years of Charlie's arguments and appeals, and he lost. And the result was a personal bankruptcy, Chapter 13, to cover our portion of the denied costs. And how much did it cost? Just under 135 big ones. $135,000. That was his cost for surviving a heart attack. And his story of one of the thousands created by this factory mentality and the absolute obstinacy of... I'm tripping over it, Charlie. Of the healthcare business. Let's just call it insanity. Because the immeasurable stress created by the system's intransigence is incalculable. Imagine dealing with this news while recovering from this trauma. Imagine the stress it caused for Charlie's family, dealing with the insurance company, the attorneys, the courts, the appearances, filings, depositions, and all the associated stresses that these situations generate. It's not necessarily conducive to rapid recovery. Oh, and by the way, Charlie's recovery was curtailed so he could maintain a full-time job throughout the process. Because after all, someone had to pay the bills. Sadly, this problem is pervasive throughout our society. And every business, as people cheat the system, and the system cheats the people. You've got to consider the cost of treating the uninsured, the indigent, the homeless, the illegals, the deadbeats. I mean, come on. Money needs to come from somewhere. Somebody's got to pay. And you know it'll never be the business of health care. But what about government help? Oh, well, yes, of course. Our deficits. $141 trillion in climbing. Well, let's be honest, it's just business. But remember, do no harm. It is interesting, I don't recall having been in any doctor's office in modern times in my life. Well, I've seen images of Hippocrates. And those words, do no harm. It's appalling to me. Harm is being done each and every day. Overworked healthcare providers, some of whom are phenomenal. Others who are just workers that don't get it, they don't care. One of the things I stated in my letter to Lauren last night, was talking about the nurses that I worked with in Vietnam, doing what I did. I would share the story with you, a letter that I wrote to Lauren, and but I chose not to keep a copy of it. If my wife had come across it, she would never understand it. The reality is, I look at the caliber of the women in Vietnam who were nurses and their dedication of doing no harm and doing it the right way. That's how I envision Lauren. I even made a comment to her in my note that it's very possible her grandmother could have been a nurse in Vietnam because she's got that same mentality. It's so damn refreshing to see it this late in my life with all the hell I'm going through, finding examples of people that I've known in my life and worked with in my life. And Lauren is one of them. And so tonight it became to some degree important for me to share my story of this past week and a half, but also to share Charlie's story. And he approached it in a different manner. And all of these things tie together. But it also became important for me to also dedicate this program to Lauren, who will never hear it. Maybe I dedicate it to Lauren because I've heard it. And this all became so damn bloody important. And don't misunderstand, not everyone in the medical community is negative. But after a while, you get drawn into this. The stories must be shared. You have to find the goodness. And it's out there. But boy, it's pure hell finding it. Lord willing, I will be back with you tomorrow. We've got a very, very special program that has been put together for this coming Friday night. I will be going out with Charles Friday night and a friend of ours. We're going to hear some friends musically do their thing. And I am working diligently on the rebuilding of my production studio. And there's going to be some interesting changes in the caliber of some of the things that we do. Also, we have a very special program that we will be doing very soon. It's going to be among the first that must be done in the studio. A tape that was sent to me, it was recorded in the year 2000. It was contraband. It was never supposed to be heard by the public. But I'm going to share it with you, and it'll take damn near an hour to play it. And it's going to be one of the most profound things you have ever heard in your life. Stick around. We'll tell you more about it next week. Thank you for being with us. It's good to be back. I hope I can stay here. Lauren, I know where you are tonight. Good night, my dear. See you, folks.
It brings back a night of tropical splendor. It brings back a memory evergreen. I'm with you once more under the stars. And down by the shore an orchestra's playing. And even the palms seem to be swaying when they begin. It again is past all endeavor, except when that tune clutches my heart. And there we are, swearing to love forever and promising never, never to divine, what rapture serene, till clouds crowds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. So don't let them begin the beginning. Let the love that was once a fire remain an ember. Let it sleep like the dead desire I only remember. When they begin the beginning. Suddenly know what heaven we're in when they begin the beginning. When they begin the beginning.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our Easy 4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.